RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Lorraine Moller, NBE, is a former athlete from New Zealand. Of course, you know that. Who competed in track athletics and later specialized in the marathon. Moller's international career lasted over 20 years and included winning a silver medal in the marathon at the 1986 Commonwealth Games in Edinburgh and a bronze medal in the marathon at the 1992 Olympic Games in Barcelona at the age of 37. A four-time Olympian, she also completed the marathon in the 84, 88, and 96 Games. Her other marathon victories included the 1984 Boston Marathon and being a three-time winner, 86, 87, 89, of the Osaka International Ladies Marathon. And we thought we'd get Lorraine on the program this morning to talk about the issue of men in women's sports. In the news again, obviously with the Olympic boxing reigniting the issue around Sport New Zealand wanting to mix the sexes at community level while they thumb their noses at the coalition agreement. We'll ask her about that coalition agreement in our chat, which is right now. So Lorraine Moller joins us now from Boulder, Colorado. Lorraine, welcome to our breakfast program here at RCR. It's great to have you on.
Thank you very much, Paul.
We're getting to know the Moller family a bit, I think.
Yes, you've had Gary on.
Yeah, we've had him on a few times now. So great to meet you. First question right off the bat. Initial impressions, first of all, of the opening ceremony of the Olympics, and then we can talk more about what this Olympics is telling us about the broader issue that we're about to sort of talk about. So what were your impressions of that opening ceremony?
Unusual. I think a bit offensive in some ways. A lot of things in there that I didn't think had really any relevance to sport or the nature of the event. And yeah, it just speaks to sort of how things are going these days. So it wasn't unexpected.
Things have gone a long way, haven't they? They really have.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Olympics has become such a spectacle. When they had the first commercial Olympics in 1984, then suddenly the whole flavour changed because now it's this great vehicle to be able to market certain ideas and reach a lot of people worldwide.
Yeah. So do you think this is the corporate sponsors' influence here? And then what does that tell us about the big corporate sponsors?
Yeah. Well, I think that's what happens with anything. They're out to sell us certain ideas and not necessarily for our benefit, but for theirs. So that's what I see happens. And it's a shame because it takes away, I think, from the role that the Olympics could play, that it is there, I feel, to elevate human beings. That's its purpose. That's the whole idea of it was a time of peace and it was time for us to exalt the finest in human beings. And I think we've got to always look for the finest and adhere to that kind of ethos.
Is it elevating women, Lorraine? Is it elevating women?
Well, you know, it has, but it's been the women that have elevated themselves. Because, you know, when the Olympics was revived in 1996 by Pierre de Coubertin, it was for men. It was a men's event. And as it was in the ancient Olympics, it was primarily a men's event. They did actually have a woman's equivalent, but different events and on a much lower key. But when it was revived in 1996, women weren't included. In fact, you know, when I ran my first Olympics in 1984 in Los Angeles, That was the first time that they had the marathon in the Olympics for women.
And right, because we forget so easily, don't we? It seemed like it's just been like that forever, but no, no.
Like, gosh, it's all history, you know. It's changed so much since during my career, I saw this incredible evolution in women's sports and the opening of opportunity and equity just coming on board for the women. And it was a very, very exciting time and a time in history where women were making many inroads that prior to that had been exclusively male, and sport not being the least of it. And now it seems that we're in danger of going backwards and losing all of that we gained in those years.
Maybe we could say we're going more backwards than we could have imagined, because not only is it sort of rewinding, it's undoing, isn't it? The boxing is an example. Anyone would know that there was a risk of injury, male versus female. Okay, DSD, whatever it's called, that's a category, apparently. But we all know that you put the two together and one is always probably going to win, and it could be a very dangerous situation for one of those. That's what we saw. So that's more retrograde than just going backwards, isn't it? I think, anyway.
Yeah, I grew up in a fairly big family, three boys and three girls, and the boys were not allowed to punch the girls. Now, the boys could go have a punch-up if they wanted with each other. Mm. It wasn't so serious, but you didn't punch the girls. That was like a golden rule. And now we've got it on TV and on the biggest spectacle that you possibly could have. It sort of undoes something that I think is fundamental in society, and that is that men and women are not the same. They're very different, and they could be considered in many ways a different species. And we needed to have our own category because women simply cannot compete with the men, and anything that involves strength or speed or, muscle mass or reaction time, men are superior in those things, and we women just had to get over it. That's the way it is. And the best we could do was have our own category and our own distinct category that was sacrosanct. And that happened. And by, I think, the 2000 Olympics, women had parity in events. They had their own events. And it worked really well. And it was governed or perhaps policed by our willingness to have a cheek scrape of a chromosome that determined whether we were XX or XY. Now it's like, and that worked really, really well. It kept the woman in the woman's events and the men in the men's events. And, if there were people that were maybe in between, there was usually a committee that, would determine what the truth of it was. But the thing is that it worked for 99.95% of the people. And so it was pretty clear. And why they did away with that, I don't know, because it's created a whole lot of trouble and boundary violations that threatens to derail the women's sports and everything that we gained in that 20 years, 30 years.
What was your reaction? You're in the US. I'm sure you keep pretty close on what's happening here. The coalition agreement on all of this, that must have been kind of music to your ears, was it?
Yeah, it was. You know, I was involved with when New Zealand Sport were first looking at having these gender inclusion. So essentially changing the boundaries of what was allowed. And they had a survey and involved me in it, and Roe Edge from Save Women's Sports and a few other people. And it seemed to me very clear back then that they already had decided that, Grant Robertson, who was the Minister of Sport at the time, said inclusion was the bottom line, and that was it. And that told me that there was a, they had an agenda that they wanted to fulfill, and part of it was changing these boundaries that sort of muddles everything up. And, you know, I think it's, and we're not just talking about elite sport, because there's, you know, the grassroots to the elite is, it's sport. And they all affect each other. But, you know, the pathway to elite sport for women is through the grassroots. And so you can't just mix everything up at grassroots, which is what they're saying, and all, it really doesn't matter. But it does if there is places. Well, Paul, let's just backtrack, because if we're talking about grassroots, what we have presently in New Zealand is that it is on the OECD list. It has the third highest rate of obesity behind the US and Ireland. Okay, so it's disgusting. That country that I came from, that beautiful green, you know, outdoors, everybody sporting, you know.
I remember it, Lorraine. I remember it too.
And how can we now be like amongst the fattest, unhealthiest people in the nation? And then, you know, you've got obesity, and then, of course, you've got diabetes and heart disease and all these other things that go along with it. So it's a real health crisis, mental health, you know, one of the highest suicide rates in the country. All of these things, lifestyle and the way that we view reality. And
boy, that's a big one, Lorraine. That's a big one.
Habits. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's as big as it gets.
What's happened to us?
Well, I was going to ask you what you thought had happened. I mean, I've done some thinking on it. I think, I wonder what you make of this, is that life was too good and too easy in the lucky country, God's own. And when we get that, it's the human condition to just let go. Everything requires a minimum effort for a certain standard or pleasure out of living. So you kind of lose your discipline, you lose your motivation, and you're tied to the pharma industry that no matter what happens, there's something to take. So there's no direct personal responsibility involved. I mean, I could go on, and I probably missed some, but I think it was just too easy. It was too good here.
Well, I think maybe you're too hard on the people, because I think, you know, we shape our children into certain habits, and, you know, the children go to school, and they've taken largely, they make kids sit for long periods of time.
They've
zed out. They've taken playtime. There's been an overemphasis on academic achievement, or just forgotten that, hey, the sitting body in children, they've got to move. And we need to move and play and develop. And we have these natural, biological, inbuilt programming that will take us to our own best development. You know, it's not natural for kids to sit still. I think, you know, certainly the, you know, the cell phones and the AI and all that has made the modern world societies of sitters, and that's a terrible thing. I mean, I sit and look at a screen way, way too much time. Most of us do. But now you've got little kids and they're not running around and they're not getting that, you know, physical, mental connection and learning how to exercise their own power and make things happen for themselves. And they just become fat little blobs in front of themselves.
Well, what are they eating, though? That's really what I was thinking of when I just had my rant before. You know, it's easy. I mean, we've all been there, a parent myself. You know, there are easy ways to do things with the kids, or there are ways that require more work and input and attention from you. And it's easy to take the easy way out. Oh, yeah, you can just have that. That'll shut them up for another 45 minutes, because everyone's time poor. That's another thing.
Yes.
That's what I was thinking. It's just the standard of nutrition. We do a lot about that here, obviously.
Yeah.
And the way that's changed. I mean, I love to look at the old photos and films, and it doesn't matter where in the world it is, everyone's about the right size, you know. Not now, though.
Oh, I know. They all sort of go hand in hand, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, so you want instant food and instant gratification, and you've got the little dopamine every time you hear a ding on your phone. And
Uber Eats rather than cooking meals now, I'm sure that's replaced a lot, you know.
Yeah, and I think probably parents are, a lot of them are single family homes, and then children that are not just instilled with the habits that they need to have a really good, long, healthy life and be contributing. I think we all come into this life with something special that we can contribute, and a lot of people just don't get to it.
Poor things, yeah.
You know, and Paul, we have now for the first time a generation of children whose life expectancy is less than that of their parents.
That's a shocker, isn't it? That is a real shocker.
So, you know, we're trending the wrong way. So it's almost like all this wonderful progress we made in the second half of the 20th century is starting to sort of do a U-turn on us. And so just back to the sports thing and the women's sports.
Of course.
Is that one of the hardest hit areas is girls at puberty. And about half the girls give up sport altogether at the time of puberty. And this is crucial because at puberty, the girls and boys are about on a par. In fact, the girls could probably outperform boys at the same age prepubescent. However, once puberty hits for the boys and they get testosterone, they just go on a trajectory, a physical trajectory, which is huge. So the boys get testosterone, the girls get estrogen, and suddenly there's this great divide. It's at that point where most girls will give it up altogether. They think, oh, it's a boys' domain, I can't compete. Also, they go through, for a lot of women, they don't have as much confidence in their bodies, and what happens, they become very, very self-conscious at that age. Now, on top of that, you know, New Zealand had these really great initiatives to increase the participation of girls at that age in sport, and spent millions of dollars, in 2018, around that era. And then they introduce this boys being able to participate in girls' sports, and I'm talking biological XY boys into girls' sport. Now, that might seem this inclusion is the bottom line. Well, I thought the bottom line was to increase the fairness and participation of girls in a way that encouraged them to take it up. And this policy that came in does exactly the opposite.
It's so obvious, though. It's so, I mean, hello.
Yeah. So, you know, I think, well, the New Zealand First policy, right, they talked about fairness and safety for girls and women. I go, that's great. I'll get behind that. I'll support that. And so they got in, right, and they have this coalition agreement, and they say they want to ensure publicly funded sporting bodies support fair competition that is not compromised by rules relating to gender. Okay. So this is good. This protects our girls and can encourage them to come into sport. So, you know, and it's not just, you get these low-income, low socioeconomic groups and largely Pacific Islanders, Maori and other ethnic groups this is where the girls are really compromised. These are the ones that are going to have health problems later on and that have the highest rates of obesity, et cetera, and don't exercise at all. And so how is this inclusion of this very small percentage of people fair and safe to women and girls?
Well, it's not, clearly. And that's another amazing point, because I can't remember, you say 99.95 or whatever percent. It's the head of a pin. In fact, it's even smaller than the head of a pin. Mm-hmm. I've always struggled to work out why this, you know, it's a hill to die on for people when it involves such, you know, you can almost count them on your fingers that you've got. I don't get, you know, being so strong about it, given the numbers involved. Not to say that anyone should feel out of place. I don't want that to happen. But, you know, it's hardly compelling in any way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also like you have a rule and you have a category that is determined by sex, okay? XX, XY.
Yeah.
Pretty easy.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're an XY and you want to present yourself as an XX, you can't ever be that, but you want to present yourself as that, well, great. That's your choice. You're not excluded. You still go in the XY category.
Yeah.
Why? Why would you? Because what I see with you've got, you know, Leah Thomas and Laurel Hubbard and these a few that have come out, they don't want to compete in their own category because they're not going to win. They don't have a right to win. You know, it's just like an adult doesn't have a right to go in the child section or...
Yeah,
you identify as a child.
Well, it's cheating in the end.
It is. It goes against the entire ethos of sport, right? So, you know, we don't want to go and watch the Olympics to see cheats. We want to be inspired. We want to see somebody do something extraordinary you know, expand the boundaries of what we think we can do as human beings, and we walk away from it. We go, that's great, and it makes us feel like we have more possibilities for ourselves. But, you know, if you're watching a girl getting beaten up by a man in a boxing ring, it doesn't sit well. It doesn't have that great feeling, you know. You know, then you're just a voyeur. You're not a spectator anymore.
Well, we all know it's cheating. This is the thing.
Absolutely.
You know, how can there be any honour and glory in that when we all know anyway?
Yeah. So, yeah. So boys don't punch girls, right?
No, well, that's how we were taught, and we knew why. In the time we've got left, I want to get your thoughts on the redefinition of words that now have sort of coming into everyday use, meaning a different thing. I think you used one earlier, inclusion. What does that really mean now? Gender. Well, I agree with your definition. It's my definition as well, but it doesn't kind of mean that anymore. And there are other words that are used to reshape our thinking or attempt to anyway.
Yes, like the word woman.
Yeah, well, there you go.
You know, and we have politicians and they're asked, like, well, what is a woman? And they choke on it. I haven't had time to think about that.
I haven't been briefed.
So, you know, I it used to be that it was a female, an adult female.
Yeah.
Right. And the female is an XX chromosome. Person. So these words now are sort of getting loosey-goosey, so they've been redefined.
Well, is it fair to say they've been weaponized, actually?
I think so.
Yeah.
You know, words are really powerful.
They are. They mean a lot. Yeah.
Well, if you're a lawyer, you know that. You know, it all depends on the word. Let's look it up and see. And, they changed the definition. So I think, you know, woman should be woman and men should be men.
I haven't asked a woman this. I should have. How does it feel when you hear someone like the person we're talking about, who presumably knows what a woman is because he's got a kid? So must have some rudimentary knowledge just even get that far. When you hear someone unable to just instantaneously define a woman like that, as a woman, how do you feel?
Oh, I think it's ridiculous. You know, I go, well, they should not be representing us. You know, I'd say get another job because you're not doing your job that you were assigned to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I think we probably...
Well, he was the Prime Minister at the time, remember?
Yeah, well... Yeah,
not now.
Yeah.
Where do you see this all going, just to wrap up? How long do you think the madness has got to run?
You know, I think that as human beings, we have a certain sense of the natural order of things, and I think that... we're a bit slow on the uptake. We don't sort of realise that maybe somebody's pushing an agenda to sort of corral us into a certain situation. But I think that people think that we have a system that I think is in some degree self-regulating. And I think everything runs its course and reorganizes and comes back to something that's workable. But I would hate to see us go down this road of not having women's sports. So, Paul, I was thinking with this, with the Olympics. Now, if you took the women's team and the men's team and you said, okay, we're not having women's and men's, we're just going to put you all together and you all compete in the same event. So we've got the very best from New Zealand, the very best men, the very best women. You put them all together in the same event. How are they going to fare?
It's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Yeah. You're going to have a huge gap. You're going to have the men at one end. And you're going to have the woman at the other. They can't compete together. That's just impossible. There's not even an overlap. You know, I would never have made an Olympic podium if I had to compete with men or with boys or even, you know, look, if the athletes are going to cheat, they're going to probably take steroids. What are steroids? Male hormones. Nobody cheats by taking estrogen.
No. Yeah. Well, you might as well just open it up to everything if you're going to go this way. And anything would go.
Yeah,
no, I know that, but that's where it leads, right?
It's ridiculous, you know. So, you know, the Olympics originally, you know, they have the Olympic flame and they went to and got that, you know, they light the flame, they carry it around the world, they carry it into the stadium, they have the flame burning. And if you look at the legend of the flame, it comes from Prometheus. Prometheus went to the cauldron of the gods and stole the fire and gave it to human beings. And that is the divine spark that each of us has within us. And the Olympic Games, to me, is a reminder that we all have that divine spark.
Yep.
And we can, you know, if we are creative and we do what we're passionate about and we are honest and skillful and we aspire to the very highest within ourselves, then we can really set that alight. We can make that divine spark. But you have to earn it. You have to... you know, dedicate yourself to finding the very best in yourself. And that's, to me, what the Olympics is about. So, you know, all this other rubbish is, it's a distraction. And I think for us to, you know, sport is wonderful in that way. And it's a very safe way for people to learn about how to engage in this reality and to put themselves body, heart and mind into a single thing and develop your skill and become really excellent at something. It doesn't matter what it is. And everybody has their own, you know, not everyone can be Olympians or get a gold medal like that, but everyone can have their own personal excellence.
Yeah.
And that is what I think we want to look at to the Olympics for. And does it serve that purpose? Does it bring out the very best in us? Or does it do something else, you know? And we want to be careful that we're not being sold something that is to our detriment. And I think that's often, you know, it's like, oh, let's have all these sporting people and they're doing really well and let's give them sponsorships. And then everybody thinks that they're good because they eat a certain food or they, you know, wear a certain brand of shoes or whatever it is. So, you know, you can, marketing-wise, use that concept of these healthy sporting people to sell all sorts of things that are, that have nothing to do with a benefit to the human race. You know, so, you know, maybe people wake up and become more discriminating. And I think they do, because I think when it comes down to our children and our health and really basic things, and we want to live lives and we want our children to have better lives than we had and all the rest, then we have to wake up and say, hey, this isn't good enough. We can do better than this. And demand that our politicians and the people that make these things happen serve us, not serve some, you know, corporate, whoever, I don't know, who thinks, you know.
I call them the they.
The they.
Yeah, serving they. Very well put. I got to ask you this. What's it like to stand on one of those Olympic podiums? What's it like?
Oh, man. It's amazing.
What are you feeling?
You know, I'll tell you, well, there was two moments. There was one coming into the stadium and going around and having these 80,000 people standing up and cheering for you. Not to count all the ones who are in their living rooms watching you on TV.
Come on. Yeah.
You know, to absolutely for a moment to be the center of the universe.
Yeah.
That's how it feels.
Can you feel the energy kind of sweep you
talking
along?
Talking about it, you know, I get sort of like, I get goosebumps.
Yeah, well, I can hear it.
You know, a certain sort of ecstasy. And then standing on that podium, you know, is another moment, and just an overwhelming pride and a deep, deep gratitude, you know, for my life, for everything that I've been given, and all the opportunities and all the people that helped me along the way that got me to this point, you know, because you don't do it alone. You know, you have a lot of wise people that give you their advice and come out and find you and watch you and, you know, your family.
Well, they must feel good too, eh, because they know that they've been part of what they're witnessing with you there on the TV in that moment too.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, you just want to burst with goodness. It is a wonderful feeling. So,
what a wonderful description. Well, I really appreciate you coming on our program, Lorraine. It's great to talk with you about what we've talked about. And to hear you just describe that moment there too is really cool as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. And I hope we get some more Kiwis that feel that and stand on the podium, you know. So that would be wonderful. Okay. Thank you for having me on your show.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.